But look at it this way, Wes. If you have a transformer, you look at the gauge of the wire, you know how much current you can put in there. Okay, so that's one limiting factor. Now, the insulation determines your breakdown voltage. Now, to get the kind of wattage you're talking about, you've got to start 10 times the voltage, 10 times the current. Either way, your current is either going to be too high, causing overheating, eventually failure, or the voltage is going to bleed the current and break through. So, yeah, I mean, try what you want, but those are engineering axioms. You can't fool them.
Yeah, gentlemen, you brought up a very interesting aspect. When we're talking about the tubes, we're talking about 1 microsecond, 2 microseconds impulse, which was made for the AMAC 15R, which is a very, very small, tiny, tiny tube. And this is a triad. Now, the question then is, of course, I can have the tube that is going to work with 5,000 watts in peak, in an of an impulse, but what is the temperature this withstanding factor for the transformer? Yes, I would agree, you'd probably not survive, even though that you have an impulse, and then you repeat, you have repeatedness of the impulse. The repeatedness of the impulse should not be as great as the period of the impulse. Because this thing is going to go into smoking immediately, yes. I agree with that. George?
Yeah. Of course, you remember, Wes, that anything made for peak power is going to have mechanical construction that can withstand high voltage pulses briefly. Generally speaking, the big deal here is that, you know, the power exists for a fraction of a second. Maybe that radar pulse is, you know, 100 microseconds wide, or a thing tip is milliseconds or something. And in any event, that would be a vertical thing, a horizontal one. You know, generally speaking, your issues generally are getting rid of the heat. And if you take a RMS-rated device with those kind of things, and then try to put peak power in it, figuring that the RMS device will handle the heat, that device isn't built for the high voltages. So, again, it's exactly how it's engineered that's going to determine the power handling of that. John?
Then also, Wes, you have the slew rate of the device. A tube doesn't have that limitation as much as transformers and those other discrete components you're looking at. So if the slew rate doesn't work with the pulse times that you're using, you're going to have so much attenuation that they're going to be useless. So there's too many things fighting you.
Oh, that's an interesting one. I wonder what George says about it.
Well, like John said, I mean, the slew rate, you're basically trying to charge and discharge it, you know, an inductance in those transformers. And in the case of a transformer with enough iron in it to go down to 20 kilohertz, to 20 hertz, that's a lot of inductance. And it's going to take an awful lot of DLDT to deal with that. You know, watch out where your current comes from, because you run into current limiting mode, and all of a sudden it's not assuming that it's fed from, you know, a pure voltage source like we usually do. You know, I mean, why is it that we always seem to assume when we buy these things that, you know, the source has a zero output of beats? you know, it makes it interesting. But in short, you know, it's an interesting paperweight. I mean, that's how I view that thing. John?
Yeah, I agree, except I wouldn't even use it for a paperweight. I wouldn't even let that thing in my lab. It's curious, but it's a curiosity to look at it and fathom what the hell it was used for, but I would have no use for that. I wouldn't even want to experiment with it. I basically know what it does from just looking at it. So, over to you, Wes.
Okay. Now, another question. John proposed that if I want to change the impedance to 50 ohm, then I use the balloon from 50 to 75 ohm. Now I'm dealing with the input. That might be similar way that we could deal with the output. And my question is, why should we deal with the balloon, which actually adds additional losses, if any, if we could actually play with the real 75 ohm impedance of the of one end of that, trying to change that? How would you do that? George?
Yes, Wes, what I would do is I would nail down what I needed to do, and I think I call that gathering requirements. Then I do some search to see, you know, what kind of devices have done that, and think about, you know, do I need to pass DC? Is it AC only? Is balance important? What frequency range does it have to work in? You know, how much money do I have to, you know, what about the environmental conditions and so on? And then I'd see if, you know, if budget isn't an issue, I'd see if I could go buy something that would do that. The usual suspects might be RF Parts Incorporated, you know, Palomar Engineering, maybe Mini Circuits Labs over in Brooklyn. These are places that do that stuff, and they sell stuff that's reasonably priced. So I'd go and look at that stuff. Amazon Associates comes to mind, another place to look at. Now, given all that, maybe there's something you want to do yourself, and I'd go and look at Lutroff on his book on balance. You know, ferrites and impedance matching devices. Lutroff did a really nice job. And a guy from ARRL, whose call sign I forget, wrote a really good book about playing with balance. And I'd look at that. Wes?
Well, at first I put this device for curiosity. Then I find out that it's not for what I thought I might use. But then I'm thinking that I could use it as a middle guy between my measurement equipment acting as a receiver. So let's say I'm working on the impulses, which the typical frequency is about 20 kilohertz or 40 kilohertz, whatever. And at that point, for the probe, actually, I could use it as a middle guy. All I need to do is where would the impedance? Oh yeah, definitely. One of the things that I have gained is just me playing with the impedance matching. Now I have 125 ohms, and it's not necessarily what I need. From the other side, I have a 75 ohm, and this is not necessarily what I need. So yeah, it's just an interesting project. I mean, I have a whole lot. I just don't know what I don't have. But I believe that what I don't have, John has. we're talking about the John. John has a lab within the lab. That means his lab is not only lab. That's what he has in the lab is what he was willing to expose and use. But he's got a lot of equipment in other place. So we take both of us, between me and John, oh boy, it's a one hell of very unique lab. I wonder how many people in the United States, being ham radio operators, decided to go that far. John?
Oh, I'm sure there's many. I really do. There's a lot of guys out there that tech. But, Wesley, you know, you're worrying about something I don't think you have to worry about. It's not like somebody saying, look, we're going to give you this signal, and it's going to be 1 volt peak to peak. We want you to do this and this and blah, blah. That's not the case. You're going to be able to put any voltage you want into it. So don't worry about the minor, minuscule amount of loss you're going to have in a balance to change it from 50 to 75 ohms or to take the 124 ohm output and change that to whatever you want. Balance are very efficient. They're if designed right and made right. So I think you can make any impedance match you want. And if you look in those books that George has recommended, I'm sure they'll show you ways of wiring it up and doing whatever you want with it. It's a great thing to play with if you know, but I know you don't have that time. You're like me, you're involved. So, but have fun. Maybe you can make notes on what color smoke comes out of different parts or something like that. George, over to you.
Yeah, then you could produce an academic paper on the input impedance of a hot dog. And if whether or not it was a balanced grill or an unbalanced grill. Sorry about that. Anyway, hey, I'm going to have to sign over here. I got to teach school tomorrow night, and I got to go to work in the coal mine all day too. So let me say 73's here. Great conversation. I enjoyed it. And I think the cool thing on the TechNet is instead of focusing on Wesley's device, which is arcane, probably the best word I would use for it. Instead, Dick was smart enough to steer the conversation towards the impedances of the cables and where they came from. And we probably learned something, and I did too, which is that the impedance of the cable is not constant as a function of frequency. At low frequencies, the impedance of almost all cables, including coaxes, rises substantially. And, hey, now Dick forced me to go out and get the paper that I remembered the formula from, and there it is, and it applies to both coax and the twisted pairs. So, yeah, interesting. I can honestly say I learned something tonight. John, over to you, and I'm saying my 73s, and then over to Wes.
Okay, George, 73. Enjoy the morning, and teach your students not to listen to me or Wesley because it'll make you crazy. Wes?
Yeah, I agree with you both, gentlemen. Talking about Wesley's device would be boring, even to me. It's not really Wesley's device that is important. It wasn't important to have device for me just to have this device. If it was only for the device, I would never buy it. It's just for the conversation and education. But, George, we have had a discussion, very much scientific discussion about the hot dogs. And before you go, John, just say a few words and have a good night. John.
Okay, I said 73 to George. He's got to get up in the morning. He can't continue this.
Yeah, let me say 73 here. And for the record, although I enjoy eating hot dogs, but at some point, you know, they just end up giving me a headache. So I try to go easy on the hot dogs. God bless. 73 and good night, WB2.
Yeah, have a good one. Well, yeah, the discussion was about 2 hours long. It was about the history of hot dogs and where it came from. It's probably, I have something with that history. I'm always interested with that. Anyhow, guys, it was a great conversation. John, I do appreciate talking to you, sir, as well, and I'm really pleased with the participation of George, and I do apologize that I misspelled your name. Just getting gold all aboard. Enter in here.
A2ABV.
You can get old as long as you can find your way home. That's it. But you don't leave your house that much. What are you doing tomorrow?
We have a guest in here. Eddie V, pick up.
Hey, good evening, Wesley. Good evening, John. How's everybody? Hey, John. I'm just heading to bed, but I was curious if you got my email.
Yes, I did. Cool-looking instrument. I like those graphs. Very informative. And that's great. It records that, and you download that into your computer and print it out. Have fun with that. Looks, and for the price, you can't go wrong.
Now, it looks like fun. Now I just got to learn how to read some of those graphs and play around with some antenna stuff. At least I can, like, see the results of what I do.
That's true. As you make changes, you can go back. As long as you keep the same parameters, you'll be able to compare one graph to another and see how your improvements are going, which way you're going, the capacitive reactance or the inductive reactance. That's going to do a nice job for you, especially if you're building small stuff in the lab, you know.
Yeah, roger that, roger that. I found some extra dough for it. I really wanted it. It looks cool, too, you know, and it works real well. And it's a lot more accurate than the meter on my MFJ tuner, I can tell you that for sure. And there's another program in there called Polar Plot. If you have a beam antenna, it, like, does a whole rotation, and it makes, like, a whole graph of the radiation pattern and everything. It's pretty neat.
That would be interesting to see how that works. As the antenna's rotating, you're picking up different signals. You should have to have a vehicle out at a certain radius to get a true spectrum of the antenna. So I'm sure you could work it out.
Well, I'm not up to beams yet. In the interim, I was just curious if you saw the email and what you thought. In the interim, I'm going to say goodnight. I got a double shift tomorrow. I won't be home until 11, and I got to be there at 7:30. So have a great evening, fellas. Wesley, have a good evening.
73, Jake.
Yeah, have a good night. Pleasure. This way, I would say, finally you've got a few benefits of being on TechNet. One of them is that we could speak longer, thank you, for the people who make it that happen. We can share the comments after the TechNet, and I'm really glad about it. But the second thing is that looks like a bad guy is not really satisfied. For all of his efforts, he didn't succeed, and to actually...
Whoever the bad guy is, I don't know, but Rich, K2KMB, said that he was going to try to arrange to leave the repeater on Sunday night, too, if it was possible. So it did go off tonight, but maybe the program wasn't set. I really don't know.
Yeah, well, thank you, Rich, if you're listening to us.
So what was the answer? What are you doing tomorrow?
I made the list. I have three or four tasks to be done. For some reason, the burner shows the error, but it is putting hot water. So there is an error, but it's showing, it's switching on. So at least I have less problems than I thought I'm going to have. I should have listened to John, KC2WGB, just do it on time when there was a time for do it. Oh, I went today to the second house and, did I tell you, John, a few days ago, I have this CNC and I have the other one, which is a semi-manual. And I remember that about a year ago, I bought a frequency drive. I was playing with it. It got damaged, and I got another one, and I put it on a shelf. And I wasn't really doing anything with it. Didn't understand them about it. So, and I was very much put awed into the subject because of the fact that the one got damaged. So I took it. I was very cautious. And again, I connected and I look at that like I'm a complete monkey with it. So I left it again, came another day, and finally I was able to manage more, and this device started to work. So I've got the rotation. I found what is the error. The problem is with the Chinese translation. Some people call it Chinese English, which every second word, or sometimes every word, is not what it's meant to be, or it's a completely error. Made by some Chinese translator.
Yeah, they call that Chinglish. The only thing you got to really be careful of is, I'm sure your machine has an anti-reverse mode, so you got to make sure the phasing's right and start it up. Be very careful. Get the rotation the correct way.
Oh yeah, definitely. So then, I start to figure out how everything works. Of course, even the device is Chinese. That means operates Chinese way, not the typical American way that everything is kind of logic and organized, but it works and it's a good device. Anyhow, another day I was able to make a lot of progress and I switch mode, which is a braking mode for the when the motor is stopping instead of just waiting till the motor stops, and starting the rotation not from the zero frequency of the frequency drive but from the actual frequency. So I've got a beautiful action forward and reverse and to exit. And then, still I had a problem because all of my buttons from the original machine didn't work. I could operate from this membrane switches on the frequency drive, which is very much inconvenient and unsafe. And today, after the tooth time being in the basement, so it was like in and out, in and out, in and out. I finally figured out how to switch that frequency drive from the start and stop buttons on that frequency drive to the screw terminals, which actually by connecting the buttons to it, I could do it. The problem with that is that these buttons are momentary, that means if you push them and hold them, they work. You cannot just push the one and then push the other one and, automatically switch off. So then I have to go with the a very old technique, which is a relate to the memory, which is the, simple schematics. You take few relays and you make it a memory out of the relays. So I realized that I have that thing ready already in the machine with two heavy duty relays that came with the machine. All I need to do is just apply 110 volts. No, that would be 220. 220 to it, just to power up the transformer that powers up the coils of these relays, left and right, each one separate, and then use the contacts of it and connect it back to the very tiny screw terminal on the frequency drive. This way, I will create when I press the start button, it will hold the rotation till I put the stop button and press the reverse, whatever it is. The problem that I have with it, I don't know how sturdy is the Chinese device.
Yeah, but you got to worry about the current you're going to be putting through those buttons. A lot of them are just low voltage, low current devices. So your relays, be careful. I don't know the operating voltage you're going to be using.
No. The relays, are high voltage relays, but on the contact of relay, you have no voltage. It reacts as a closed contact. And to exchange.
No, when you push the button on your unit, it's going to close one of those relays. You have to supply a voltage to the coil. That's what I'm worried about.
Are you talking the coil of the relays? No, it was original switching panel that came with the machine. All I got to do is use this relay, the contact by relays, with no voltage applied to the contact at all, and use them as a closure contact with the tiny wires going back to the screw terminal of the frequency drive that has only 10 volts on it.
Yes, I know that, but your membrane buttons on your machine are going to be operating the relay coil. You want to make sure that it can handle that voltage and current for that coil.
Oh, then I'm not worried about it. When I open up, I see the left and right relays, and then I see a transformer for the coils. So that came with the machine. That was originally three-phase machine. It does have the emergency button, stop. The emergency is the stop, actually. And then right and left rotation. So I'm changing nothing with it. Originally, when it was a three-phase, it was made this way that you press the start, and then you press the stop, and then you press You press the start, then you have a left-right. Oh, boy. I don't know how they made it. I didn't analyze that. But anyhow, I'm changing nothing in the panel. All I do is, instead of connecting a voltage like it was connected through this panel to the motor. Now, the motor is not connected to this panel at all. It's connected direct to the frequency drive.
No, I understand that. The relays will only be doing the same thing as when you push the buttons on the drive. They're going to replace those buttons, and you're going to use the buttons on your console to operate those relays. I understand that.
Right. The only one I'm worried about it is I never tried on the frequency drive to short the common with the reverse and common with forward at the same time. Although this is a 10-volt logic, I'm afraid just to even give it a try, just to not damage that frequency drive, the logic. So what I'm afraid for is a delay of this big relays that I'm going to be using for switching, the delay time. If it happens that for the fraction, let's say, instead of someone, or let's say me, pushing rotation to the right, and then instead of pushing stop, there would be the rotation to the right and rotation to the left. Now I've got to make sure that both of these relays are not on at the same time, and then that there is a significant time between the first one going off and the second one going on, and to exit.
No. You don't have anything to worry about. You wire the forward relay and the reverse relay together. That one relay has to be opened to close the other relay. It, no matter what they do with the buttons, you won't have a problem, because the relay has to drop out before it can change.
But it's not only that. The relay has to hold. When you put the forward, the relay, you press it momentarily, but the relay is on all the time. So the part of the contact of that relay is being used just only for the purpose of holding the action, if you know what I'm saying.
I know exactly what you're saying. That's right. It'll hold the relay in place, but it also holds a contact open. That contact goes in series with the other coil on that other relay, so that until the first coil loses power and the contact returns, you cannot close the second relay. That's common in wiring.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yes, you're right. I wonder if they did this the same way, the Chinese. But what I remember also, that when I was playing with the buttons with the first frequency drive, it was a big boom, and my circuit breaker blow up in the main panel, and my frequency drive was out. So probably Chinese didn't do it the way that KC2WGP, A-chan from Staten Island, would design it. Something is different with the Chinese mentality, and to exist.
And also, remember, you don't want to have power to hit the stop button. When you hit the stop button, you're going to drop a relay out, stop the machine, not pull a relay in. You want to make sure you do that. This way, if you get a momentary interruption of power, the stop relay drops out and the machine's unsafe.
You know what I think about it? They have also a stop button on the small screw terminal of the frequency drive. They have also stop. So I don't need the relay for the stop. The stop could go directly to it, as the stop is made to interrupt the action of either one.
No, but that depends on how that's wired, because you don't want to have to send power to that unit to make it stop. You want it to stop with a loss of power. So that's the way all industry, and you're supposed to have a stop button, and then you should have an emergency stop button. There's usually two on the machine, but the emergency is usually a red mushroom.
Yes, I have one that is a red mushroom. That's the emergency. What I cannot recall is a stop button at all. I know that I have I know that a machine, because I never used a machine, that particular one. I see only three buttons. One that is black, the other one that is green, and the other one that is red mushroom.
Okay. Well, look, there's no problem in wiring a safety stop or a kill button. That, you know, with the mushroom head, you can change the wiring around just as long as it works that way. And if you do lose temporary power, the machine stops and it will not start again unless you actually press the start button. That's the way you want to wire it up. And just do those relays interlocked like that and you'll have no problem.
All right, I got to add another button. I don't know what they did. Definitely the machine. And also, I do not know the American standards. I do not know. I do not know how the American standards could agree to the Chinese crab coming to the United States with three buttons only.
KC2WGB. That doesn't surprise me at all. A lot of import machines, even from Italy, we had to redesign the control circuits because they were not acceptable by OSHA.
You think the Italian made it this way? I mean, Italian are sexy. If you look at the Italian machines, these machines are sexy and done to the maximum precision and elegance and to exist.
Well, I don't care how they looked or how elegant they were or how well they performed, but they had to meet safety OSHA rules. And many of the stuff, a lot of the things that came from Europe and Asia didn't, because, well, in Asia they don't care about people. But in Europe, a lot of the codes aren't written the same way they are here. Germany's pretty good, though. The machines that come from Germany have a lot of safety features.
I tend to believe that Europe is more scrutinized to the safety than the United States. If you see all of this machinery, the lathes and the milling machines, they're in the United States. They don't have any kind of metal around the safety guard. In Europe, oh boy, every little machine has a box around it. Enter G.
KC2WGB. Nope, those machines are no longer allowed in factories. Anything that turns, anything with a shaft rotating, even if it's just a smooth shaft, has to have a cover on it. Not allowed to have that stuff protruding past the machinery bulkheads.
When that change in the United States, because everything that I see right now in Europe, I'm not talking about something from 20 years ago, 30 years ago, or 4 years ago. Right now, everything has a guard and a glass door, the metal door with the glass in it, something like that.
Yep, those changes started here in this country, I'd say 20 years ago, when OSHA started walking through all of these factories, and all of that stuff had to be done. Either plexiglass in front of machines, or machines had to be in special rooms, if they couldn't have shields on them. Oh yeah, that's been going on for quite a while, and it was very expensive. And if we're going to sell machinery to other countries, we have to meet, like, German standards are very tight. They have other issues that we have to change, where they can do things in Europe that we're not allowed to do here, but they're not that unsafe, but they're just not allowed here. So yeah, it's been done here for a while.
That's where Van Dahl and Haas, they make all of the machines with the boxes.
Yeah, because look, there's no way to take a shaper and make that traveling head extremely safe. Then you had to have areas painted on the floor where you're not supposed to walk, or railing, things like that, because that shaper head is moving. There's no way to really guard that. But now they have shapers that work within a cabinet that you can close and watch it operate. But the old ones were just cordoned off.
Interesting, when we start to talk about the Haas. When you are rich, you are successful. Young lady, the last name Haas, the first name I don't remember. I don't care what is her first name. She I mean, there was a series of short videos. For some reason, I get into that, and then I see the representative for Google in for Europe, and the last name is Huss. So the young girl from the rich family was nominated. I mean, how old is she? 23? 24? Well, right after the college, as a representative of Google, hand by hand, and to exam.
Isn't her name Gertrude?
John can't recall it. I stopped hunting girls.
Oh, okay. Yeah, a lot of Swiss stuff is nice, too. I like a lot of stuff that was made in Switzerland. Very precise. In Austria, too.
Yeah, but what brought my attention to that is that rich goes to rich, connection goes to the connection. Probably I didn't describe it properly. You know, there would be a plenty of guys and women with a high level of education and experience who became representative of Google for Europe. Not the former schoolgirl who knows nothing about it. Connections and to exist.
EC2WGB. That's why we have that thing. Not what you know, just what you know. What you know, it's not quite true.
Okay, John, it looks like we're going to lose the repeater. Have a good night and to exist.
Okay. Talk to you down the log tomorrow, probably sometime. KC2WGB.
And to exam. Have a good night. Thank you very much, my friend.
Find something else interesting on eBay.
Oh, I already got one. This is something that I would love to have, but first I need some advice from the friend of mine. It's a power meter. It's a Hewlett Packard 436A, but in one panel, connected together with the another device, and on that device it says 1 kilowatt equals 10 microwatts, 100 watts equals 1 microwatt. 10 watts equals 100 nanowatts, and 1 watt equals 10 nanowatts, and whatsoever. And this thing doesn't need a thermal sensor. It is like the power meter is connected to this device internally. Very nice, John. Job. And the second panel is being called the noise control / MSA select number 2. And, of course, made for military. Enter a trip.
Sounds like an HP unit. What is it, a rack with 2 modules in it?
That is correct. Each one takes half of a rack. So you have two front panels, one next to the other. What is interesting with it is all of the power meters that I have, which is only one, is made for microwatts or milliwatts or watts maximum. That's the maximum that it can get with the thermocouple. This unit looks like it has a noise control, which whatever it is, but it is made for kilowatt of power. But you can measure only 10 watts and 1 watt or whatever you want to through the second panel. It does not have the connection for the thermistor.
Well, I believe that when it plugs into the rack, the thermistor is built into first unit, and I think the second one plugs into that. I don't think there's a cable that goes from the 36A to the attenuator.
Yeah, that's what it is. It does also have a few attenuator controls. The device is pretty pricey. They want $249 for it, but I think I can make an offer. You know what? Since we didn't lose the repeater yet, I'm gonna send you the link. Hold on.
Okay.
Check your email.
Not here yet. I'll show up.
Check if you didn't get it in the junk box or whatever.
No, it tells me when it goes to the junk box. Oh, give it a few seconds. That's a pretty old instrument. Let's hope it works. Looks like the guy who took these photographs is a moron. It looks like it has an external bolometer in the back.
Yeah, you have also one of the features shows at the rear, and this is a high VHF connector, typical for the antenna.
Yeah, there's also something that is partially in the picture. It looks like a bolometer.
Which picture is that?
Top row, fourth picture from the right.
Oh, no, that's 50, that's reference, reference attenuator.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that is, though.
Yeah, it must be inside. I was trying to track MSA, because it's the other device, it's a noise one, but whenever I was Googling for MSA, it was a headset for the airplane control, for the noises. But if you look at the front panel of that right-hand side part on it, it says 1 kilowatt equals 10 micro watts, 100 watts, 1 microwatt and whatsoever. You have a choices in here. So that means that this device could handle pretty much 1 kilowatt. So we're looking at the second switch on the right side of the panel. This receiver shipped in the middle, receiver IF, and then a transmitter, which is XMT, HTHF, and two BNC connectors. One is for precise attenuation, and the other one is out. That's on the front panel. Now, you have something that is looks like a push switch, or just the bulb in like at the light, and it says, "Oh, that's where the device is on." Indication the device is on. No, it says noise diode. It means that the light is on when the diode is indicating. I don't know.
KC2WGB. Yeah, it might have a noise bridge in it. I don't really know what the use is of this item, but looks like it's for super high frequency. I don't know. I guess you could probably look it up in HP and get the specs for it.
Could not. Didn't find it. The right-hand side was not done by Phyllis Buckhart. It's an association of two devices. Left-hand side is made by Phyllis Buckhart. The label on the right-hand side panel says noise control / MSA select number 2. PN, PIIN, and the number is a serial number. Doesn't say that this is a Hewlett Packard. It is not.
Okay, but you definitely need power sensors for it. Without power sensors, it's useless. So you need bolometers.
John, show me where the bolometer goes. The bolometer is not able to withhold 1 kilowatt of power.
It's going to go between the two devices. Read the article.
Hold on. No, John, the guy is the moron. The article only relates to short buck at 436A. He didn't know what he had. He just read the label on the QL Packer and he put the description to the QL Packer. But it says it's 50 gigahertz, the maximum frequency. When I was reading QL Packer 8480, it goes probably from, if I remember correctly, a 100 kilohertz up. So a bolometer is, and also if you look at the front panel left hand side, HP 8480, at the place where the bolometer was, there are no connectors. They are blanked with a piece of plastic. So the bolometer, at everything that I could understand, is between interconnection internal between left and right hand side panel.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but I do not see photographs are not descriptive.
Ashley, where are you?
Looks like the repeater's still up.
Okay. Did you find a picture? Yeah, thank you whoever put the repeater on. When you keep going on the picture and then it's open up like a big one, right? Look on the right hand side, vertical row. Go to the one the before last to the bottom.
Are you looking at the first picture on the first row?
No. The first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Picture number 7 from the top. Before last from the bottom.
The first one in the lower row, is that what you're saying?
Oh, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. Because you are... No, yeah, I click on the big picture. It opens up the picture. That's why we couldn't understand each other. When John, when you have a picture, just click on that big picture. Do the double click. It opens up the big one, and then all of the pictures you're going to have on the right-hand side.
I know that. Are you talking about opening up the picture that's the first one on the first row?
Yes. First one on the first row, click on it, double click, but not on the small picture. On the big picture. Do the double click on the big picture.
Okay. Now, what do you want me to look at?
Now it opens up the big picture. On the right-hand side, you're going to see a set of the pictures. Small one.
Yeah, those are the same thing that are in the small picture. Which one of those do you want me to look at?
Before last from the bottom.
It looks like the rear of the unit.
Do you see the red top of the box?
At the bottom of the picture, the red?
No, yeah, the picture that I mentioned to you. In the middle of the picture, you see a box that has a red top.
Yeah, it looks like it has a piece of my car on top.
Okay. Now, look to the right-hand side of that box. Do you see the U-shaped bracket and the bolometer inside?
I see what you're talking about. I don't know if that's the bolometer or not.
Yes, it is. Look at that characteristic shape, which is a circle with the two counter cuts.
No, I see what you're talking about, but I have a lot of HP bolometers. They don't look anything like that. But, okay, if that's what you think it is, then looks like it's bolted to the front of the cabinet, too. Maybe that's where the blank plate is. I'm not sure.
Okay, now, that big box with the red top on it says sensor plus plus, sensor minus minus. Wouldn't that be a part of the sensor ring, because from the front side, we know that it is able to handle at least 1 kilowatt of power. So I wonder what this plus plus and minus minus stands for.
I don't know, but it's jumped out. Now there's something below that. Let me see what that is.
All right, below that, you have a four connections, but if you look on the left-hand side, just left lower corner of the picture, you see a metal pipe, which is a hard line, and some kind of rectangular thing in it.
Yeah, I saw that.
What is that?
No idea. Don't have a clue.
But the reason to use the hard line is that the wire doesn't move.
Either that or some kind of waveguide.
Okay, now, go to the third picture from the bottom. It shows the rear of the device.
Yep, and that looks like a sensor connector on the right.
I don't know. Three wires, and it says ER beneath that, because I don't see the whole description of it. Hold on, let me see if I have it somewhere on the other pictures.
It has a lot more than three connectors on it. On the right, looks like the signal input. On the bottom, all the way to the right.
Okay, on the bottom to the round signal. But also on the left-hand side says ER, transmitter, I believe.
I don't know. No clue. Got some BNCs that are blanked off with some plastic. Got some end connectors on it. Transmit input on one of those. Don't know.
Well, definitely looks like if it does have a end connector as a transmitter input, it does not need a bolometer. There is another picture that shows, hold on. Okay, got it. The third picture from the top.
That looks like, I have no idea. It's got a part number on it.
John, look carefully. Remember what I said is the bolometer. See the edges on left-hand side of this housing, on right-hand side of the housing. See the edges of this part.
Yeah, but I don't think that's the same part that we were looking at in the other picture. Hold on, let me check.
That's exactly the same one.
Okay, if you think so.
And the reason that I'm considering buying that if the guy goes for $100 is because it does have everything inside plus a lot of extras and is made for big power. My problem is being able to measure the power with some accuracy that will be, you know, 200 watts to 1 kilowatt, and it seems like this device is able to handle that power.
Okay, well, going back to the script here, operation at 360 to 4 hertz.
The guy is moron, I told you. If you go to the picture, hold on. If you go to the picture, the last picture at the bottom, and read what it says over there. This is the rear from the Hewlett-Packard part. It says operation at 360 to 440 hertz, limited to less or equal 126.5 volts AC. But on the top, a little bit up there, it says 250 volts, 750 MAT for 100 and 120 AC. The guy who just took that part from that description, which says operation at 260 to 440 hertz.
Oh, but what I'm worried about is that's high-frequency aircraft power that you need to operate this. This is not going to work on 60 cycles, I don't think.
Okay. Read what it says on that picture from the beginning. For continuous protection against fire hazards, will place fuse with 250 volts, 750 milliamp T. I don't know what is T. For 100 to 120 volts AC input. The 250 volts, 275 milliamp T for 220 to 240 volts AC input. And then, underneath says, operation at 360 to 440 hertz, limited to 126.5 AC.
That's right. Now tell me, in that power description, where do you see it says AC cycle?
It does not.
That's right. You have to operate this off a 440 hertz supply.
400 cycle.
Thank you. It was a how?
This is the same type of stuff I had aircraft power supplies here for, and they were variable between, I think mine varied between 390, 420, somewhere around.
Oh boy. So it's the same, so it is a the same Hewlett-Packard. The only thing is that it does have a different power supply.
That's right. This will not work at 60 hertz. Now, could you modify it? Sure you can. But do you want to get into that? Kind of crazy.
Well, these devices are fairly inexpensive because it comes without a power probe with bolometer. So my understanding is that if I'm able to get a scrap from the real one that has only the power supply for a household frequency, then I can simply replace, but the rest of it is there. The bolometer could cost a $600-$700, but the device by itself is cheap and to share.
Expensive $349 unit, and the two version is going to be a rough road to go, and you're going to need it, but it can be done.
KC2ZUM.
Welcome aboard. At first, I'm not going to buy it at $300-whatever, $400. I'm going to buy it for $100 because the guy doesn't have a choice. But the rest of the stuff is worth more than the $100. John, pick up and send it to our guest.
All right, why don't you just look into buying a 400-cycle supply. Problems are over. KC2WGB, I believe, with the UN. Pick up, sir.
Yes, good morning. Just dropping in for a second. I was tuning across and I heard you guys there. You don't want to get into converting from the 400 cycle. Before I got into broadcasting, I was a mechanic at Eastern Airlines many, many years ago. When we used to put the VCRs on the L1011s and the A300 Airbuses, at first we were using standard units with a converter box, but the VCRs grew legs. So they had a separate power supply and a separate box for the transport for the tape to go on for the heads and everything. So, and they were bolted down on the overhead racks, is how we used to do it. But they were a pain in the neck to work with the conversion and whatnot. Everything on an aircraft is 400 cycle. You can do it, but it's a pain in the neck. Trust me, you really don't want to be bothered with it. The company provided converter boxes that we use from Bendix. That's the way that we managed to do it, though, by the way. KC2ZUM here. Not staying in. I just heard the... Just wanted to make a comment on there. Back to whoever gets it next.
All right. Well, this unit is a 400 hertz unit, so to convert it to 60 is easier than going from 60 to 400. That's for sure.